My name is Carrie Fettis, and I'm the Director of Training for the Fettis Group in 4IMPACT. Many of you know me personally. I'm a coach to some of you, and others we've certainly met along the journey. And today is super exciting for Tom and I. Tom is joining me. He's going to lead us through today's teleseminar, which is about onboard. And many of you that join us for our teleseminars, you know that we actually deliver these as a way to provide ongoing support and value to our tribe. Our tribe is you, our community, our 4IMPACT community. So again, thank you for coming. Some of the things that you're going to hear today, if you've been with us before, you will hear familiar principles. So impact drives income, altitude framework. We believe repetition is good, but more importantly, I really want you to pay particular attention to how these principles that you've known and heard can be applied to some of the challenges that you're having with your board. So for example, I said we're going to talk about the altitude framework as it relates to your board. So again, you've heard these things, but I want you to pay particular attention to how we're applying these concepts to, again, those challenges that you're having. So if you've got questions, please feel free to send me an email and share those questions. And with that, I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Tom.
Yeah, welcome. Here's Tom Suttis, and thank you, Carrie. We're on boards. I was thinking about this early this morning when Carrie and I were going over this, and I wanted to share with you in 30 seconds my very first real board experience was as a very young development officer at Notre Dame. I went into my very first Notre Dame board meeting, and there was a guy there named J. Peter Grace, who was this amazing business person and had Grace, whatever it was, chemical all around the world. And he reached over to shake my hand, and he said, "Hi, Tom." And as he reached over, I looked down, and he had a gun on his clip to his belt, a gun. And I'm like, wow, this is serious stuff. So that was my first introduction to a board meeting. And it's funny how even after all these years, the board meetings are still very serious stuff on one hand. On the other, I think we need some help on maybe how we handle our board, and certainly a big issue. I've probably done conservatively maybe 300, 400 board meetings. This is the 30th anniversary of the Suttis Group, and easily done 300 or 400 boards, and we've probably helped 1,000 organizations with counseling around the board. So hopefully you all have the guidebook, which we put out on boards. We do these guidebooks to help you in a number of topics. This one I'm really, I'd say, proud of. I'm happy with. I think the content in there is exceptional to help you with the board, but not because of the way we wrote it or the way I wrote it, but because these principles, these nuggets, these frameworks, as Carrie said, are just really valuable as you look to your board. Now, I think everybody on this call knows the 4IMPACT point of view. If you don't, it's on that napkin. If this is your first session with us, you'll get it rather quickly. This whole idea of your impact driving your income, not the other way around. Now, here's the real relevance of this to your board. In all these experiences and all the work we're doing right now, your board, the majority of your board members, they're going to get this like right away. They get it. They love it. They may need you to follow up with them around this idea of impact and income. What that ends up doing is basically changing the dynamic that you have with your board, and especially with your board meetings, from one of talking about reports and information and fundraising and all of that kind of operational issues, to really the thrust with your board and at the board meeting should be around your impact. That's why you see in our point of views, thoughts there, it's about the message, the story, and it's just simply about the ability for you to have blue, it's color-coded, blue conversations with your board and keep them focused on the impact side, and then the income will follow. There's a great couple of pages in here on how to changing your story. If you haven't read Power Story by Jim Lehrer, you really need to get that. It's a phenomenal book. Lehrer's one of my favorite authors, Powerful Engagement, a number of other books. But the Power of Story, the basic line is just, what is the story you're telling yourself? And he uses that both in our lives, or with our families, but I think it works really well here with the board. So what's the current story you're telling yourself? Because it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Good old Earl Nightingale in The Strangest Secret, which was written 50 years ago or whatever, is still one of the most phenomenal stories and most well-read stories around. It's The Strangest Secret to him is you become what you think about. So if what you think about your board is that they won't give us names, they want to micromanage everything, they won't ask their friends for money, we can't get new and better board members. We basically take anybody who comes to us. We're stuck with legacy board members. You know, we dread board meetings, all of those things. If that's your story, that ends up being the story and the fact. So what if in this news story, you can read this yourself, but I think these words might help you, and so you can think and make notes. But what if your story was more about our collective board is actually engaged, that's a purposeful word, engaged with us at 30,000 feet around our vision, around our message, around our impact? What if our individual board members were helping us at 14,000 feet around strategy? What if our board really understood their role when it came to funding, and they loved that role? What if successful community leaders really believed in us? We're fighting to get on our board. Not that we had to go out and get them. They wanted on our board. But why? Because of our impact. It's an important part of the story. So you can keep going up. But there's a negative story and a positive story around your board. Obviously, I'm encouraging you around the positive story. Hold on one sec. Sorry, I had to clear my throat. Now, Here's a nugget for you. This is if you've been through our vocabulary, change your vocabulary, you'll get this right away. But the whole idea of being on the board versus on board. Amazing how when you just draw a line through that article or whatever you call a THE, the, if you drop that preposition or article, whatever it is, it changes everything. Because what you really need are people who are on board. Now, I don't want to overplay this again because you can read through this whole guidebook, but at a high conceptual level, the difference between being on board and on the board is huge. And really, people don't even need to be on your actual board to be on board. You're looking for champions and passionate advocates. We'll talk about that later. But if your collective board is on board, it changes everything, and it makes just life so much better. So your goal should be trying to get these people on board. I've got a couple notes in there. I try not to make this guidebook a rant, but there's certainly a couple places in here where you can see that I'm not real big on these nonprofit boards. I think they're ineffective because I think any of them protect sacred cows. We've always done it this way. Tom Peters has a great line, DSGYs, designated self-appointed guardians of yesterday. And many of these boards self-perpetuate. They have people on there forever. They get like-kind people on, and they're not the kind of people that we like. So it's a different mentality. And I guess maybe most importantly, you don't need all entrepreneurs on your board, because that board would take you in crazy places. But there needs to be an entrepreneurial attitude, and right now with most, quote, not-for-profits, there is not an entrepreneurial attitude. In fact, most boards right now, and Kerry pointed this out to me this morning, you've got wonderful CEOs in the real world or leaders, senior staff at really good companies, or you have these really smart entrepreneurs, and all of a sudden, they get on a, quote, not-for-profit board, and it's like they turn their brain off. It's like they don't know how to deal with a not-for-profit. They let you get away with stuff, and I don't mean that in a financial or an ethical or a illegal way, but they just they allow organizations to do things that don't make any sense to them, and they couch that under this attitude of, well, it's a not-for-profit. So I would never do this if it were my business, but it's okay for them because they're a not-for-profit. So I want you to think of all of that. And there's a note on page 10 also. I didn't go deep into it, but the idea of bringing more women onto your board. If you haven't seen Sheryl Sandberg's book in the last couple of days that she's catching a lot of publicity around called Lean In, is the glass ceiling and corporate and all that stuff. Why? I think a lot of that is the same thing in the not-for-profit world. I mean, there are some amazing women out there that would add so much thinking and counsel to your board, and we need to look at those people as well. I did do a mini rant about just to grab your attention, where if you read it, I'm not going to go into it, the idea of no more boards. I mean, wow. What if we just said, screw this, there are no more boards. Just get rid of all of them, start over. Kind of a tabula rasa, if you will. What would the new design, if we were redesigning nonprofit boards, what would it really look like? I gave you a new model in there that's really a threefold kind of a thing. One is there has to be some kind of executive group, some kind of fiduciary group that has expertise in law or accounting or business. And the idea here is that somebody needs to help with the organizational and fiduciary matters regarding government, et cetera. More importantly to me is this kind of mastermind alliance, which is right out of Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich. So think about who could you bring on as part of this mastermind alliance that would really help change the direction, that would help you scale and grow your organization. Who would be on that? And then maybe there's a third group of ambassadors, advisory councils, whatever, and it's only made up of champions and passionate advocates. So no meetings, no gathering, none of that stuff. It's basically these people are here to help you. So I want to play off that last thought just for a second. Give me champions, not board members. There's this great, I led a board retreat, a board experience, if you will, down at Disney. And it was a really large board, actually two boards together. It was a youth development organization, really high-level people on their board. They got some senior people. And I was going over the whole thing with the president, and he said, look, you know what? I really am looking for passionate advocates. That's why I want you to help me get out of that. So if you put CPAs, champions, and passionate advocates, boy, that for me is almost the perfect profile of what you're looking for. How about a quick time out for myself and for you and just make a big point that I'm afraid I'll lose, as Carrie said, in my senility later. Not all of you have champions and passionate advocates on your boards right now. Many of you inherited your boards. Many of you have legacy members on your board. You don't have a perfect board right now. Nobody does. I've never met any board that had, just the right ideal profile of everybody on the board. But I want you to think about something. Everything we're going over, it gives you a really good opportunity to reframe and redesign your board. I know some of you think that's an almost untenable position and an impossible task, but if you just said right now, look, you know what? I am going to think about redesigning my board. What would that look like? Well, the first thing is we're going to get some champions and passionate advocates. If we've got some on, we should focus on them. If we need more of those CPAs, so to speak, we should go get them on. And then we've got people that are on our board bus right now, and Jim Collins thing on the bus. We need to get some of those people off the bus. I am giving you permission right now. It's not easy, but I'm giving you permission right now to go have those hard conversations with people on your board that need to get off your board. You need to go do it. Here's the only tip I can give you. It is as much for them, as much for their sake, as it is for you. They're toxic in many cases, or they're just they're the wrong people, and they're definitely in the wrong seats because they're on your board. So what I'm giving you permission to do is go have that conversation with them. Just say, thank you, you're awesome, you've been great, you've been on our board for 20 years, or you got on our board 4 years ago when you were told that you don't have to give money, that you just have to give your time, and right now that is not our current model. So if you want to go with our current model where you have to be a champion, you have to invite others, and you have to invest, that's your role. If you can't do those three things, it would just be better off for you and to save you a lot of time and energy to go ahead and focus your efforts in other places. So you have my permission to do that. Have the one-on-one and make that happen. Real quick thought, this is kind of a nugget, but it's a principle of ours that will help you a ton with boards. And the reason I can say this is because I've seen it happen so many times. And this is about the vocabulary that we use. Most of you on this phone, I'm looking down the list, we've got Patricia Kennedy on from Sticks and Stones in Ireland right now. And if Patricia hears me talk one more time about changing vocabulary, she's probably going to throw up. But for Patricia and for all the rest of you, this is changed vocab as it relates to your board. We've had, I remember National Catholic Reporter, I remember a number of organizations that left a training with this vocab, went right back and on the very next board meeting, like put these huge words up all around their conference room, their board, where they're having the board meeting. Words that basically said, mission statement crossed through and it was about message, and survival crossed through and it was about vision, and how there was no more on the board. We wanted people on board. And the whole idea of transactions and relationships and appointments and visits, etc. So I think this vocab change, when you tie that to the whole idea of the four impact point of view, impact driving income, those two things together allow you to create a completely different kind of culture, if you will, with your board. And since I mentioned Patricia in Ireland, I will never forget I was at a board meeting, and I can even share with you it was the Abbey Theater, which is one of the most iconic places you'd ever be at. It was founded before there was a country. So the Abbey was founded before 1916, before Ireland. And a board member went through this, just what I'm doing with you right now, and all of a sudden this really successful entrepreneur and businessman just basically looked at the Abbey team and at me and said, geez, dude, anyway, he's dude in Ireland, but you get my point. He's like, why didn't somebody tell me this was sales? I hate fundraising. I don't understand fundraising, but I understand sales, and I love sales. And I'm even encouraging you to say that, I think this vocab change can help you tremendously when you're trying to get your board more deeply engaged with you. But take a breath. You need to take a breath and relax. Because the next big principle is probably one of the most powerful things that people have taken away from us in the last 10 or 15 years, which is when we started using it. It's the whole idea of altitude. I'm not going to repeat the altitude piece entirely, but I want you to really think about altitude for your board. So the simple altitude is on the napkin on page 17. It's, the blue is around 30,000 feet, the Y in vision, and 14,000 feet, which is a reference to the 14ers in Colorado. Is the what, and that's strategy, and 3 feet is the how and execution. So think about this. Where should your board be focused? And I want you to focus on these three things for me because it will help you be able to deal with your board in a different way. Your collective board. that's your board as a group, should be engaged with you at 30,000 feet, period, nowhere else. Just think about that, what that would mean. If they were really, really thinking with you and your even your board, quote, meetings and your sessions were around talking to the collective board about the vision and the purpose and the mission and the message and the impact of what you do. Then, in my world, each individual member would be engaged with you at 14,000 feet around strategy. And this is where they get to specifically use their own expertise and experience, where your accountants, your attorneys, your life insurance salesman, if you're in distribution or service, you know, your board members who can be of real value there. Or how about your board members who's actually participated with you and used your services? You're on a hospital foundation board, for example, or you're at the, just thinking like the Venice Family Free Clinic out there in Southern California. You know, they've got multiple boards, but if you've got board members who know what you do and then have an area of expertise that can come in and help you with that, it's huge. And then you need to look at my last bullet, which basically says no board and no board member should be engaged with you at 3 feet around the how. If they don't have the confidence in you to deliver on that, then one of two things has to happen. They need to leave. If they don't have confidence and trust in you that you can operate and execute, then they need to leave, or they need to marshal a whole board together and you need to leave. I know that's just ridiculously blunt, because obviously, though, I feel that certainly anybody listening to this is going to be on the first side, not on the second. You know what you're doing. You know how to deliver your service. You know how to deal with domestic violence if you're the Women's Resource Center. You've been doing it forever. And you're really good at it. Same thing goes with Pro Kids or any of the groups that are on this. Educate Pioneers. I mean, this, we're talking an organization that's changing the way that we're going about education in a really creative way. Man, they got it down. They don't need help at 3 feet. They need engagement at 30,000 feet and then maybe specific help at 14,000. I hope that helps you. There's a funny line in there about that. Another Irish social entrepreneur basically said, "Hey, Tom, our board is afraid of heights." I think that's pretty funny in some ways, and hopefully you can laugh at it. But if you've got a board that's afraid of heights, boy, you're in trouble. So listen, these next two things coming up are maybe the most important ones if you're taking the time to listen to this right now. The board is not responsible for fundraising. Okay? Period. You have to face these facts, okay? The board doesn't want to fundraise. They hate to fundraise. They don't ask their friends for money. They will work hours on special events. Of course, in my world, those are not special, and they're not events, and they raise a little bit of money. But if you keep this attitude that my board doesn't help with fundraising and they're responsible for fundraising in any way you want to play that, that's massive frustration for you and the board. It's big-time stress for you and the board, and it creates total unhappiness and a lack of satisfaction for you and your board. So here's what's kind of funny. I just checked in with Nick Fellers, our president, and Nick and I and Carrie, we're out with boards almost every week. He said somebody came up to him last week and said, "As soon as you told us we didn't have to go out and ask, we actually wanted to." Think about that just for a second. As soon as we told the board, "Listen, you're not responsible for fundraising. We don't expect you to go out and ask your friends for money, certainly not alone." And in our model, that is not our model. No board members are asked to go out and do that. But this woman said, "As soon as you said we didn't have to ask, I kind of wanted to go out now." So who knows how that works. But so really, if that's not their role, if the board's not responsible for fundraising, what is their role? you should grab page 20. You should look at Champion Invite and Invest. We've got a little card that you can actually go online or download or just email Carrie, and we'll get you a copy of it. We usually put this funding rule on one side of a 4x6 card, just the 1, 2, 3, your name of the org at the top, and on the back we put altitude. And then you can walk into a board meeting yourself and say, look, I got a little different agenda today. I want to talk about altitude as it relates to our board, and then I want to talk about your role. And if you're really authentic, 99% of the people listening, that's actually 99% of all not-for-profit and certainly all four impact leaders, you should be able to walk into your board and say, you know what, again, being totally authentic, I don't think we've been very clear about your role, especially your role vis-a-vis funding. And I want to make it clear. Because in this impact drives income culture that you know we're all trying to get in right now, the three roles that I, the CEO, or I, the executive director, or I, the president, that I need you to serve with me and I need you to fulfill are these three things. Number one, you have to be a champion for this organization, for the cause and the case. You know, again, whether that cause is kids or hospice or anti-defamation or, you know, you're at Whispering Hope Ranch and you're doing this amazing thing out there with kids or domestic violence or whatever. It doesn't make any difference. If you look at that board member one-on-one, and they hesitate one nanosecond about the idea of being a champion for your organization, then they need to get off the board. There are no exceptions to that, gang. Number one is a given. If they can't do number one, then I don't know why they're on the board. And they actually, they probably want off. So number two is a different word than ask your friends for money, okay? What you really need them to do is invite others to get involved and engaged. There's multiple ways to do that. And that's not just buying tables at your event. That is actually getting some other prospects, key qualified prospects, to join them at that event. We do this thing with the hospitals, especially at Craig Hospital. This is an amazing place in Denver. It's a $95 million campaign. And Craig's board now is getting really, really good at just matching up with the best community prospects and inviting them to come down to Craig and take a tour. And then Mike, the CEO, or Mary, the foundation president, we get a couple of the doctors, we get some of these amazing therapeutic nurses down there, and we give them a tour of the hospital. And you can't walk around that place and not be wowed. This is a traumatic brain injury and spinal cord kind of hospital that's not a hospital. So I'm giving you some ideas here. So talk to your board about inviting people. Okay, come down to a tour. Yeah, it's okay to invite to the big signature event and maybe the golf outing, as long as you're not using the golf outing as a special event or a fundraiser. Golf outings are not fundraisers. They're horrible at that. But if you want to do a golf outing at a really cool golf course and your board could invite some key prospects or community leaders that maybe have the potential to get engaged with you, that's a wow. Same with the president circle or a leadership circle or a leadership society. You know, if your board member joins, then they get to invite other people to join them in the president circle or whatever words you're using around that. And then the third is invest. Here's the way to make that invest. I've been at, literally worked with hundreds of boards where before this methodology, before this funding rule came into play, it was straight across the board. Sorry, that was a pun not intended. It was, okay, all of our board needs to give $1,000. All of our board has to give or get $10,000, the old give or get line. That is a 1950s, 1960s thought process, maybe late 70s. In our world, you champion, you invite, and then you invest with these key C words. with a commensurate commitment. Now, I don't want to belabor this, but this is so important to me, and I've seen it work so often, that this commensurate word actually changes everything. Because you've got some people on your board right now. Everybody listening to this, this will apply to. You have some people on your board right now that a $500 gift would be sacrificial. Sacrificial. Just because of what they do, their calling. We're working with a lot of these, some really great Catholic hospitals around the country right now under a big umbrella organization. And these boards, foundation boards and the hospital boards, there's almost always a sister, a nun on that board. Well, for that nun to make a $100 gift or a $500 gift, it literally is sacrificial. However, there's the board chair, who's an entrepreneur, community leader, runs five companies, a $100,000 gift is not commensurate. I know you get my point there, right? So as long as you use that word, because here's what I'm recommending that you do. I actually think you should have your next board meeting. I'm jumping ahead just a bit. But you should have your board meeting. You should lay out altitude. You should lay out the four impact point of view, impact driving income, and how you want them helping you with the impact. And actually, it's a reminder to them why they're engaged with you. It might not apply to everybody on the phone, but I've been in too many organizations where every board meeting for the last 3 years has focused on three-foot minutiae and board reports and financials that nobody really understands anyway, and it's all information, okay? We shouldn't be informing your board, you should be involving your board. The way to involve your board is to talk about the blue, talk about the impact, talk about the new programs you're rolling out, talk about the number of kids, the number of people, the number of seniors that you're helping, and how we could do so much more with this, how we can scale and grow. So, sorry, back to role. Champion, invite, and invest. I was suggesting to you, you have your board meeting and talk about blue. Hand out the altitude card with the role of the board on the back. Go over the role of the board with the collective board and then say to them these words. I, the CEO, president, director, want, and my development officer, my advancement person, my VP, whatever, we want to come and sit down with you one-on-one and talk about these three roles. And then you might say something authentically like, I know you're all champions, but we want to talk a little bit about maybe how best you can help us as a champion. And then we want to talk to you about inviting, and we want to talk to you about a commensurate investment. And then actually, go do it. Go sit down one-on-one and have this conversation. Again, gang, I wish there was some way I could communicate to you on this audio, on this phone, that I've seen that work so many times, and I've had so many presidents, executive directors come back after their first set of visits and say, holy mackerel, what in the world, how can this possibly change things so quickly? It's because your board wants guidance. And they want to know their role. So I think you could go out and do that. It'd be great. I gave you another 1, 2, 3 on a board's responsibilities that you can read on page 23. Won't take a lot of time going through that right now. I also gave you another little rant about no more board, B-O-R-D meetings. So I do want to spend a moment on that with you. I just teed it up a minute ago. I've been on a number of boards, a couple of which I was very proud to serve on. One was a college here in Columbus that I was working with and asked me to serve on the board. Another was the I Know I Can Foundation, which is a college access program, which I helped found back in 1984 or 85, and now is one of the premier programs in the country. But I have to tell you what, I can't go to another board meeting. I can't go to another BOARD meeting, and I'm definitely not going to go to a BORED meeting. And I don't know why, but for some reason in this third sector, I don't understand why we can't make our board meetings into memorable experiences. They are boring, and you wonder why nobody wants to come and why it's the same old stuff. I encourage you to read page 25 and 26 with the idea of here's another challenge. The first challenge was you need to lay out this funding role, your role to your board members. Second one is you need to go meet with them one-on-one. But I guess if there was one before that, change the nature of your board meeting. Blow that thing up. Just make it so that it's so memorable that people are walking in going, wow, what just happened? I mean, push that envelope a little bit. Take some risks around your board meeting. First of all, stop having them in a board room, and I mean a BORED room, okay? Nobody wants to come and do that. Have it out in the courtyard at your school. Have it in a classroom. Have it in an operating room at your hospital. Have it where you deliver your service. Have it in the homeless shelter. Do it in the DV and actually have a chance to meet and see people that you're helping. Just do whatever you can to try hard to not do the same old, and you'll be amazed at the results that you'll get from your board. There's a couple other things in here, and maybe, Carrie, if you we're at 40 minutes right now. Didn't know whether we wanted to take the last few minutes if you've gotten any questions. It looks like one question just came in from somebody. I'm not exactly sure, but they just probably didn't get to it in the book yet. But on page 29, I deal with it. It's this whole idea of should we put prospects on our board, Tom? And should we be asking people as part of the prospect, would you like to be on our board? Now, my answer to that is a real simple 1, 2, 3. Number one, every prospect should have a customized strategy. So it's not about whether they should be on your board or not. It should be how are you going to maximize the relationship. Now, if they would be a good board member and a champion and be of value to you as a consul and a guide, you should put them on your board. But nobody should be put on the board with the idea that if we put them on the board, we're going to get more money. Now, that's not saying that being on your board doesn't keep them more engaged, and ideally, the more engaged they are, the better. However, if you drop back about 8 minutes in this audio, if you put somebody on your board and they go to one meeting or two meetings, and they're the most boring meetings ever, is that going to help your cause? Is that going to help the size of their gift? Or is it actually going to make it harder? Something to think about. So on page 31, while there might be a couple more questions coming in, or Carrie, if you want to even, I don't care if we open the lines up again, if somebody just wants to audio some questions, but the call to action, if it were me, I gave you 7 things on page 31. If it were me, I'd figure out who my CPAs were like today, like in the next 15 minutes. Pull out my board list and say, who really are my champions and passionate advocates? And that's who I'd work with. I would ignore everyone else. Number two, I'd go recruit more women and entrepreneurs and small business owners who really get this and can get stuff done. 3, I'd make my next board meeting a memorable experience. I already mentioned that. Put somewhere where you get a real spark. 4, I'd change the framework of the board, and I focus on altitude and impact and feedback. I definitely change the vocabulary. I definitely share roles and responsibilities very specifically. And then number 7, I've said it a couple times. If you've taken 44 minutes out of your life to listen to this right now, and you trust us at all in terms of our experience and the 30 years and the couple billion dollars and the thousands of board work that we've done, if you have any confidence in that at all, I'm challenging you, I'm begging you, I'm urging you, have that memorable experience, and then tell your board that you are going to come out and sit down with them one-on-one for a visit to go over their role and how they can best help. If you could take only one thing away from this time you've invested in this right now, if you can reread this guidebook, and then you can have that board session, and then just sit down one-on-one and have a conversation and a dialogue with your board member. I'm guessing that most people listening to this have not really done that one-on-one, except maybe when they first tried to recruit that person to come on. Hopefully I've given you some good ideas and some frameworks that can help you with that conversation and with that dialogue. Carrie, I don't know whether you're still on or not. That's 45.
I am. It's fantastic. I've had a few questions in here, and you've addressed all of them. I think the last those last points you just made are just really, really really important that we keep emphasizing with everybody on the phone, because the big questions I'm hearing, Tom, are around, you know, my board is huge, Tom. How do I manage all these people, right? Or I've got some great board members who want to introduce me to friends. You know, what do I do with them? And you're really addressing a lot of those questions with those last bullet points that you hit for everybody. So I think that's great.
Yep. Hey, Carrie, it looks like we got one more, too. Somebody was asking about committees, and I hate committees. I hate the fact that even we have committees on our board, they just seem to be a cop-out for a lot of things. I put a little note on page 37 in the addendum about the campaign committee, but even just the whole idea of committees, My attitude, Carrie, is that if everybody understands their champion, invite, and invest mode, then if you need to have two or three key people on the finance committee that are really helping you with, I don't know, you know, endowment investing, or, you know, if you want a couple people together. But to me, it's not about having a fundraising committee of the board or a development committee of the board. I think that defeats everything we just talked about. Every person on your board should be engaged with you about championing, inviting, and investing, every single one of them. And as soon as you get this committee, and it's a fundraising committee or the advancement committee, then you're basically saying to the rest of you, well, I don't have to worry about that. You know, those other people are on that committee. I'm on the special event golf committee or whatever. So anyway. Sorry.
No, I think that's a great point, and I think everyone here, I think their biggest challenge is just really, you know, from a leadership perspective, right? We're the staff. We're the, how do we really step into this role as leaders and effectively, you know, not just manage all these committees, but lead the board, and give them clarity around where they can help us most.
Carrie, that's a great way, I think, for us to close out, and thanks for reminding me of that, because you've been doing this since you were 15, so it's been a while, but I've been doing this...
Which was only like 2 years ago.
Ten years ago, maybe, or seven. Hey, but I've been doing this for 40 years, and I will share this with everybody on this. I've seen it. The really great, successful 4-impact organizations, there is never any question as to who's running the organization. It is not the board. It is the leaders. It's the senior staff. Leaders lead. Your board's looking for leadership, as Carrie said. They expect that from you. If you've got a huge board, 40 or 50 members, you're saying to yourself, well, I can't get out one-on-one, but split it up among your senior staff and let everybody get out there. But Carrie's point is a great way to end this. You know, the boards, forget fiduciary. I'm not talking about legal. I'm not talking about 501c3 and all that other garbage. I'm talking about how do you have impact? How do you scale and grow your impact? It's got to come from you. The board would echo this for me. They're looking to you for leadership. If you've got a board member who thinks they're running your organization, I mean, seriously, that's just ridiculous. So leaders lead, as my friend Bob Werner, who's on a bunch of boards and is probably one of the most amazing Jewish philanthropists and mensches in the world. Bob says leaders lead, and your job is to lead, and your job is to lead the board and to get their help. And they can co-lead with you at 30,000 feet, but not anything lower than that. So listen, go to it. Good luck to all of you. It's great having you on this, and Godspeed.
Thank you, everyone. All right, goodbye.